Alec.
I'd like to welcome anybody new, anybody coming back. Welcome to AA. Where should I start? My sobriety date is November the 3rd, 1988. So I just have over 25 years. And that doesn't make me anybody special or anybody better or bigger than anybody sitting in this room. I got here just like everybody else. And a little bit about me before I got here was is I drank, and I drank a lot, and I couldn't stop. So, you know, if that's a little bit like you, you know, I can remember, you know, just wanting to, you know, try to live life, you know, without drinking, and it just wasn't possible for me. You know, my life was just drinking every single day, and I couldn't stop. I couldn't control it. I didn't know what an alcoholic was, and, you know, and I know one thing is that I needed help. You know, I needed to stop. So what happens is I'm a longshoreman, and I started the waterfront when I was like 14 years old, and I would be drinking like all the time. I'd be drinking at work, and I'd be driving great big machines. I'd be driving like front-end loaders, and I'd be driving like bulldozers and forklifts, and I'd be working on the waterfront, and lunch breaks, I'd go and have some drinks, and you know, I can remember having these drinks, and I'd go to the bar, and I'd have bets with people that I could drink, like, you know, at least, what, 10, 20 pints, just during the hour, and, you know, never have I done that sober. You know, never have I ever done that with water or anything else. I don't have an allergy to, you know, to water. So it just doesn't happen today. But back then, I didn't even know anything about the allergy. And I would drink, and it wasn't good. You know, anytime I drank, it wasn't good. You know, so I needed help, and I got help through my union, and I just couldn't stop drinking, you know. And, you know, I talked to this guy on the other end of the phone, and I asked him, I said, it was my union and some help, and he turned out to be my very first sponsor. And I said, like, I just can't stop drinking. He said, well, can you stop drinking just for today? And I said, well, that's kind of a silly question. I can quit just for today, but where is it going to get me? He said, oh, you don't have to worry about that. He said, why don't you just quit for today, and I'm going to help you tomorrow. And I knew anybody could quit for a day, but I know I couldn't quit for two. So I did quit for the one day, and I got some help. And he came to pick me up, and he's giving me a ride. And he's giving me a ride to this place called Detox or something. And I thought it was like the better Betty Ford Clinic. So I asked him, like, is there like tennis courts and swimming pools there? And he's taking me to Vancouver Detox. And believe me, there's no tennis courts and there's no swimming pools at Vancouver Detox. So he's driving me there, and I can still remember some of the words as he's driving me there. He asked me how much I made that year, and I made a lot of money that year, you know, quite a large amount of money that year. And then I asked him how much he made, and he said, well, I only made like maybe $30,000 or something. I said, like, how can somebody live like that? He said, well, I'm driving you to detox, right? He says, and I'm happy. I got a girl here, and, you know, and I'm driving you to detox. I only made this much money, and I'm super happy, but you made all this money, and you're miserable, and you're going straight to detox. I'm like, you got a good point, right? So anyways, I went to detox, and I hated detox. I don't know if any of you guys know what detox is, but it's hell. It really is. It really is. And you don't drink there, and I thought I would actually get a drink there, but I didn't get any drinks at detox. And it was hell. I can remember when I was at detox, there were people that were coming back after an hour. They're going somewhere, and they're coming back, and they're super happy. And I'm like, where are you guys coming from? They went to Happy Land for an hour, and they came back. And I found out it was like an AA meeting. I'm like, what's an AA meeting, right? So my sponsor had special privileges to actually come and take me out of detox just for the night, and then bring me back to detox because he knew people there. So he took, I said, I have to get out of here. It's just too strange, because I didn't know anything about recovery. I knew how to drink. I knew how to lie. I knew how to puke. I knew how to sleep with your friend. And I knew how to cheat and lie and steal and be miserable and angry all the time. You know, that selfishness and that self-centeredness, that meanness, that hate, that fear. And that was just absolutely every single day. So he came to pick me up, and he actually took me down to the Vancouver Recovery Club. And he took me to the 8:30 meeting. And when I went there, I actually fell in love with AA. You know, here's a guy completely hopeless, helpless, dying from drinking as the dying can get. And people were up at the podium, and they were talking about hope. They're talking about love. They're talking about not drinking. And I never heard stuff like this. I heard about puking and drinking. And, you know, it was a complete opposite of what I was used to. So I fell in love with AA by very first meeting. And I am one of those guys who, one of those people who did come here and get it, love it, and try to do it at the very beginning. But it was hard. So I came to the meeting, and I loved it the very first meeting. And I loved it so much, I hung around for the 11 o'clock meeting. And you know what? That day, it just really changed my life. I went back to detox, drove them nuts. Can you imagine a loud guy like me? Well, you really wouldn't want to drink with me, believe me. But but sober? Oh, my God. I still drive people crazy because I'm so loud and just so positive. So you're either going to really love me or you're really going to hate me. You really will. And if you hate me, hopefully we can get to that part with the steps. And oh, my God. Because that's what I came in with. I came in here with love. I came in here with gratitude. And you guys gave me hope. And that hope is that I never, ever have to drink again. But that being said, does not mean anything's going to change in your life. So I was hanging around the rooms, and I was like, just crazy. Like, you know, and that's what happens to people. I don't know if it happens to you, but it happened to me. If you don't do the steps, you're going to be crazy. You know, and you're going to want to drink, or you're just going to be right crazy. And so that's where I was at. I didn't want to drink. So if you're not drinking, and if you're not doing the steps, you're crazy. And why you're crazy is because you're living in this, like, this selfishness and self-centeredness in this mind of yours that's killing you. And I didn't know that that was the problem, you know. So I ended up getting a home group, and I ended up getting involved in the steps. And I fell in love with this big book, and I fell in love with the 12 steps. And, you know, I can't really talk enough about the 12 steps because, you know, it just changed my life. I mean, it really did. Here's a guy who, you know, I was in just so much fear and so much resentment. I don't know about you, but I was mad. And, you know, people would have money in it. That just, I was mad, and I was angry, and I didn't even know why I was angry. And guys had girlfriends, and I was mad, and they had cars, and I was mad, and I was resentful, and I'm coming to meetings and trying to do the best I can, but I had a brain that was killing me. So I got involved in the work, and I didn't realize what the problem was. It changed my life once I got into the big book, and I found out what the problem was. And I would have bet anybody here, I would have bet you, and a few of the old-timers probably would know, oh, I don't see any here. No, I guess I'm one of them. I don't know. Okay, maybe there's a few of them here. But, you know, I needed some help, and I wanted the help here. But I wasn't really getting it until I got involved in the steps. And like I said, I would have bet anything that the problem was alcohol. And I would have bet you that. Like, look, alcohol's the problem. Here's the problem. And I'll bet you anything. And it's not the problem. So if you're an alcoholic and if you think the problem is alcohol, you're wrong. The problem is my thinking. And the thinking, it tells me on page 25, is it says, you know, our main problem is centered in our mind and not in our body. So I didn't realize that my thinking would get me to that drink every single time. And the alcohol is only a symptom of the problem, right? And the problem was my thinking. And I had these two symptoms. I had this, like, obsession of the mind, right? Where every thought overexceeds that one thought. That's it. I'm drinking. That's all there is to it. Doesn't matter if I got a sponsor. Doesn't matter if I'm doing the steps. I got this obsession of the mind. That's it. There's nothing that's going to stop me other than a power greater than myself. But I have this obsession of the mind. That's one of the symptoms. And then the other one is this allergy. And the allergy is once I think about alcohol, I'm probably going to drink. And then once I drink, I have this allergy. And Bill Wilson says it's an allergy that will condemn you to die. And he's not kidding. But, you know, when I went through this work, I knew about the obsession of the mind, and I knew about the allergy, but I didn't know what happens before that. Something actually happens before I even think about drinking. And Dr. Silkworth talks about it, and he talks about, you know, feeling irritable, restless, discontent. And I didn't realize that, and I know we're talking about the spiritual malady now, and they mention it on page 52, but it starts at the very beginning. Even before I even think about drinking as a spiritual malady, I get irritable, restless, discontent. I'm not okay. I'm irritable, restless, discontent. The next thing I know, I'm in spiritual pain. And you know what? And you feel it. You actually feel it inside. I'm starting to feel not okay. And if you're not okay, you're probably thinking about drinking or going crazy, one or the other. Right? If we don't do this work. And you know, the stats on this is overwhelming. The stats of how many people actually stay here. It's mind-blowing how many people will actually have sobriety. And chances are 95% of the people here sitting right beside you are probably going to go back out drinking. And you know, it talks about that insanity that someday somehow we'll be able to control and enjoy our drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. Many pursued into the gates of insanity and death. It's what happens. It's, oh my God, my mind takes over and here I'm back in the problem. It's my thinking. And it's like, oh my God, you know what? I don't care if I drink. I drank a year ago, 2 years ago, doesn't matter. And you know what? Maybe I can control it. And that's what an alcoholic is. If you cannot control the amount that you can take, and if you cannot stop entirely, it means you're an alcoholic. It means you're suffering from an illness that only a spiritual solution can fix. It's like, oh my God. So I kind of know what this problem is now. It's my mind. And I didn't even realize it, that my mind, and Dr. Silkworth, he talked about it, and he says, you know what, we can't even tell the difference between the truth and the false. I know you guys read that, but what does he mean by that? And I can tell you, from what I get from it, is we can't tell the difference between the truth and the false, is because the truth has always been inside me, and it's always been inside my heart. And my mind has always been in the way. And what happens is I can't tell the difference between the truth and the false because I started drinking this poison, which was alcohol, and I'd start drink, this is an alcohol, but I would drink alcohol thinking that it would be the solution. And I always kind of thought it was the solution, and maybe I did or I didn't, but it was the solution was alcohol. And it was for years and years. And I would drink it and it would lie to me. And I still wouldn't pay my bills, and I'd still wouldn't, you know, I would still puke at the end of the night, and I'd still get thrown in, up against the police car or end up with someone I didn't know at the end of the night. And it all started with the irritable, restless discontent. So, you know, knowing what the problem is, and you know what happened from what I've read, is that day what happened with AA is Bill used to go around AA, and he used to get down on your, you want sobriety? Get down on your hands and knees and pray. And that's what used to happen. And what happened was, it didn't work. And Bill ended up back at the hospital. And Dr. Silkworth said, hey, Bill, why don't you try something different and why don't you try this? Why don't you go to the alcoholic and explain, like, what's going on here? Why don't you explain these symptoms to him? Right? Why don't you explain about this spiritual malady and about this mental obsession of the mind and this allergy? And that's what he did that day. He actually went to go see Dr. Bob, and they sat down, and they're going to spend 15 minutes. They ended up spending 6 hours together, over 6 hours talking. But it all started about the symptoms. See, Dr. Bob knew a little bit about AA. Well, he didn't. He knew about the Oxford group. But Dr. Bob knew about the solution. He didn't know what the problem was, so he couldn't stay sober. And Bill gave him that day. And he gave it to a doctor. And it actually just started the because, you know, Dr. Bob knew about the solution. They had these, I think, what is it, four steps or six steps in the Oxford group before AA? That he had that. And he found out what the solution was from Roland, from a psychiatrist in Switzerland, came back and gave it to the Oxford group about the solution. And the solution is God. And nobody else actually believed that God could actually get you sober and stuff like this. But it took a lot more than just God to get you sober and to keep you sober. And, you know, as I go through the steps, and I take many people through the steps today, I understand a little more clearer about what the problem is my thinking. And there is a solution, and it is God. And I just go with what the big book says. I'm not telling you who God is, and I can't tell you who God is, but I can tell you where God is from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it talks about it on page 25. It says, our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. So God's been inside my heart the whole time, but my mind got into the way. You know, and on page 55, it says, deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. So God's been in me, but my mind's been in the way of this happiness and this love and the stuff that I should have been doing at the very beginning, but I didn't. So, you know, and at the back of the big book near spiritual experiences and stuff, it says our members, at the bottom of the page, it says our members have tapped an unexpected inner resource, which they presently use as a power greater than herself. So I'm just kind of going with what the book says, that God, this God's within me. And like, how can God reach my heart to reach your heart, or from God reaching your heart to my heart when our heads are in the way? It just won't happen. So, you know, thank God, you know, for Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank God for God, because, you know, why we're all here tonight, it's very crystal clear to me why we're here tonight is because our hearts were louder than our thinking, and it keeps us in the rooms of AA, and it keeps us coming here, and it keeps me getting more and more information as the days and the months and years go on, you know, and it really is about the heart. So knowing what the problem is and knowing what the solution is, you would think that would be enough to keep me happy and sober, and it won't. I guarantee you that you're not going to stay sober on the first three steps. You know, and why that is I have these defects of character, and this is where I'm getting to if you either love me or hate me, I have these defects of character, and these defects of character pull me further away from God and from my heart and from the truth. And it does. Like, I start judging people, and I'm really inconsiderate, and, you know, and I'm mean, and I'm angry, and I start judging the loud guy up at the podium and stuff like this, or whoever it is. I help people through step four, and guess what? I'm on everybody's step four because I use me as an example. Right on, Ron, loud guy. You know, so it's kind of funny, but, you know, and I'm not here loud today to harm you and to hurt you, you know. And you know, the funny part about being a loud alcoholic like myself is I have many newcomers in my life, and they go, Ron, your loudness is louder than my thinking. So, you know, maybe it does do some good. Not all the time, but some good, you know, where, you know, my voice can, you know, drown out their thinking thoughts, right? You know, so these defects pull us further away from God and from the truth. And the next thing you know, you could be sitting at a bar stool and you could be drinking because of these defects and because of these resentments, you know. And so we all know what the number one resentment is, the number one offender that destroys more alcoholics than anything else. But I know what number two is. And number two is what Bill Wilson told me what number two is. And that's self-pity, right? And so resentment and self-pity nearly sent Bill Wilson back out drinking. And it did, you know. So either we're maybe thinking about killing people or not liking them, or we're thinking about killing ourselves. And it's really, really hard for alcoholics because, you know, I love the alcoholic today. I really do. And the more screwed up you are, the more I'm going to love you. The more you're messed up, the more I get those. I get those people today. I wish I would get the ones who are just so willing and, you know, oh, I'm willing to do anything. I don't get those. I get the real, well, sorry, Costas, but I got one, a couple of sponsees here, but you know, this willingness that we get, you know, from doing the work, or, you know, it can change, absolutely change your life, is having this willingness and having God and listening to God and not listening to me, but listen to God. Just listen to your heart. Right? Little did I know is that if you told me, like when I came in here, God's here, right here, and you can call God, I would want that. I would really want that. And little did I know how really exciting it is to have, you know, this power within us the whole time. But our minds need to get the heck out of the way. Right, to listen to this. And you know, it does talk about, I'm just going to end up, I know I only have a few more minutes. And you know, it talks really about the closer you get to God, the better off your life is. And they're not kidding. Like, they're really not kidding. You know, any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I, you know, I can quote so much wonderful stuff from the big book that I've learned and has completely changed my life, you know. And, you know, they talk about love and service, you know, or no, they talk about, oh, God, my mind's going blank. But I like step 11, and I, you know, I love these steps. Like in step 11 is, you know, I don't know if you do step 11 or not, but everybody in AA should actually be doing step 11. And, you know, it talks about when I retire at night. And, you know, Bill and Bob knew when they were doing this work is that you would get to near step 11. And step 10 is continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. That's all through the day. But step 11, they made it really crystal clear, is that there's like 9 questions at nighttime. So I tell a lot of people, if you ever want to, like, just be gung-ho about AA again, is do the step 11 at night when I retire at night and answer those 9 questions. Because what they did is they threw kind of like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 right in step 11, because they knew that we would rest on our laurels and they'd give us this great information in step 11, you know, when I retire at night. And, you know, I think before I end is working through all this work and helping people through the steps and stuff like this. I think one of the biggest things that happened in my life was step 9. And I'm going to tell you why it happened in step 9 is because, you know, by the time you get to step 9, I want to make amends. And I have to make amends. And I really didn't want to make amends to you people. I really didn't like you people. I hate to say it. You probably didn't like me either at the beginning. And I didn't like anything. I actually didn't like anything in my life. And I didn't. And after doing the step 4, I saw where, you know, where I was at fault. And resentments have nothing to do with anybody any longer. So I can't really get resentments today. And if I get resentments, it has nothing to do with you. Nothing. So how can I stand here and get a resentment towards you? I can't. The only resentment I'd get is myself, because it's how I'm reacting to you, right? And that's what resentment's taught me. But when you get to step 9, I need to make amends to you, and I don't want to. I don't like you, and, you know, I'm trying to do my best, and I don't like myself. And, you know, I came up with, you know, after doing this work over and over, is I needed forgiveness in my life. And I knew that I needed forgiveness more than anybody I know needed forgiveness in their life. And it had to start with me. So I put me at the very top of the list in step 9. And I had to get forgiveness. And I didn't know what forgiveness looks like. I know I've gone to places and temples and all over parts of the world to try to find this forgiveness and this love. And I couldn't find it. And I didn't know how to do it, because I needed to get it for myself, because I needed to forgive myself in order to come to you. So I needed to see what that looks like. And what does that look like? And how do you do that? You know, oh, I'm just going to pray for forgiveness. Didn't work. So what happened is I realized by doing all this work is I've been reacting through my 6 and 7 and my 8 and 9. I've been reacting from my defects my whole entire life. I've been reacting from what I think. It's not from what I know, and it's not from what my heart tells me. I'm reacting from my defects of character, and I'm mean, I'm inconsiderate, and I would be reacting, and it would hurt me. So I needed to know what forgiveness looked like, and I had to start with me, and I prayed, and the only solution I could come up with is I needed to change my life. And how I changed my life from pretty much from that day on is I needed to react, not from my defects of character, but I needed to react out of God's will. And the best place I could react from is love. And that actually just changed my whole entire life. So what happened was, is how I found the forgiveness, how I can live the forgiveness, is I can react with love in absolutely everything I can do today. And it absolutely changed my life. And you know what? This isn't easy. I'm like, react with love, react with love. And if you know me, and if you hang out with me, you know I'm going to be mentioning react with love. It's not always that easy. But we can do it, and it keeps us happy. I just got tested just a couple of days ago. I got back from Mexico City, and I was there seeing my sponsor and stuff. And my kid, he's 16, phones me, and he says, Dad, I'm just going to stay here and live in Saskatoon with my mom. And he kind of met a girl. And I'm like, what? No, you're coming home. And he says, no, I'm going to stay here. And reacting with love really didn't come across my mind right away. And it really didn't. And, you know, and I not preach this, but, you know, I have to have this in my life. So, and I've also learned, like, it's really maybe not a good idea to do anything unless you're 100% sure. So if I'm not 100% sure, you won't see me do it. And so I talked to him, and believe me, I wasn't 100% sure and what I was going to say to him. And I said to him, I said, like, look, I said, I can't even talk to you right now. So I said, maybe I'll just talk to you in another day or something. So I talked to my sponsor, and then I talked to him the next day, and I reacted with love. And, you know, reacting with love is the biggest forgiveness in my entire life today. And I kind of want to live in love. I want to give love. I care about love. And anybody who's in my life knows about the love. And it's only because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for my sobriety.